the founder of our movement. Our first speaker, Bill Wilson.
I understood there, folks, that this was a session in which the experiences and the woes of intergroup or central service associations would be discussed. And frankly, I came over here for some information, strictly as a pupil. And I learned only a very short time ago that I was supposed to talk. Well, I can always manage to do that, but it wouldn't be very enlightening on the subject of intergroup. Tell you what I have in mind, that is the construction within the next year or two of a complete manual of service. As you know, we have the Third Legacy Manual of Service, still incomplete in any refined sense, and that I would like to see enlarged into something that would take in the whole function of AA from the group level up to the intergroup level to the general services, and reaching out into the world outside, touching upon any facility or anything that helps us to properly function. So, as I say, I came over to share the experience with you and primarily to listen. I must plead, too, to some neglect of the intergroup situation because I have been preoccupied with the problem for the last 15 years of anchoring the cupolo on the barn to it in such a way that the storms are not going to blow it off. And I'm afraid that I have not been in the least helpful to the intergroup association who have been struggling to get proper function and who have, notwithstanding, done such a wonderful, wonderful job. Now, I'm just a little put to it to know what to talk about. They suggest that I talk until 3 o'clock. My thought was that if I spun a little yarn about how the World Services grew and what they are and what they do, accompanied with some diagrams which might be enlightening to you on how these things have universally developed in AA, what a great likeness there is in all of these functions, as dissimilar as they sometimes seem to be. And So, here goes. I guess it was about 1937 that Dr. Bob and I got talking about how this movement could function. It was then proved, of course, that we could get a few people sober. There were a couple of score on hand. And we began to think that we needed some sort of a textbook, a literature, so this thing wouldn't get a skill, so the message wouldn't get garbled, so the message could be carried through the printed page to places which obviously 40 of us weren't going to reach in a hurry. In those days, too, we had clear notions about professionalism. A lot of us thought we would have to get subsidized somehow to lug the message from Akron and New York and Cleveland out to other centers. After all, it had been very laborious to get even 40 recoveries. Certainly, the millions of drunks in the world were not going to come in boxcars to New York, Akron, and Cleveland to get dry. So how would we get there? How would we communicate? How would we transmit what we knew? That was the crying question that was posed for the first time in 1937. Well, then as today, we had a radical element who thought that all of the paraphernalia of publicity should be used, which this country does so well. There was the other element who felt that there should be no organization whatever, not even any service organization. They rather held the view that meetings should be held in homes, that we should have no money involved at all, excepting the fellow that put up the home and bought the coffee, and that would be it, and that this word would pass quietly from one to the other. Well, both of these points of view, divergent as they were, certainly had a tremendous appeal. I mean, the conservative view was one which involved taking no risk and progressing slowly. The radical view was in taking all the risks that there were with organization, money, and whatnot, and trying to circle the world in about 80 days was the AA message. Well, after vast amounts of wrangling and debating, we hit what is usually the middle course. And I don't know, I think one of those Greeks, Aristotle, was always talking about what he called the middle way. And the middle way is something that we in AA have instinctively adopted. And it is very necessary in order to find the middle way that we have the radical group over here who would ruin you by doing everything, and the conservative group over here who would rot you by doing nothing. So that our service picture has evolved out of the middle way. And the middle way has been found by the hot debate which always comes along between these conservatives and radicals. And I feel that in a general way, if we keep up this middle way with our concepts and our ideas of service action, we are going to do all right. Right in that original meeting in Akron, there were those who wanted the conservative way. I, at the time, having a promotion in a Wall Street background, I fear I was pretty radical and pretty promotion-minded. We'd found an answer, and I was in a hell of a hurry to get it around the world. Well, the result of it was that the Akron meeting voted by a very small majority to send me back to New York, where there was a lot of money, to raise the money if I thought it was necessary, and to start up some sort of a foundation which would endow our workers and probably finance a string of hospitals, because we'd already learned that hospitals weren't very enthusiastic about drunks, and that we needed a book prepared. So I came back, and as you all know, there was very little luck in raising some money, but we did make some wonderful friends. This movement has always had a capability somehow, a very providential one, of attracting friends. Now then, I think it would be very, and perhaps helpful, if I were to start, first of all, with the service function of a single group, the way it evolved, and then show you the parallel that exists between the way the group learned to function and how AA came to function as a whole, because the basics are exactly the same, and there's nothing like a picture to show you. So let me step over to the blackboard and give you a couple little illustrations. To those of you who have read AA Comes of Age and have heard me talk before, this is old hat, but some of you might be newer hats, so let's proceed with Joe Bloch, who goes to Middletown, USA. And he's alone, and he wants to start a group. Okay, Joe canvasses the bars and the preachers and the doctors, and he gathers around them his first two comrades. Like so. Well, Joe, he becomes a kind of a local founder, see? And these other fellows are his. No irreverence intended, but he's kind of a bolt, and here's the College of Harvard. So this is the original hierarchy of service. So these guys flooded out, and they bring in some more drunks, and these drunks begin to collect in the base of the pyramid. And this is just four of them. And some of these guys have got egos even bigger than these guys. Now, at first, naturally, the founder here, he sparks these guys. He instructs them on first principles. And the meetings are all held in the house and all, and we got a little group going, and things are all right. And then this thing begins to grow, and they have to move out of the hall. And meanwhile, you see, these fellows here instruct this group spiritually, but they also perform in service. They hire the hall, and they see the local doctors and preachers, and they go to the newspaper to get some prospects.
thought that this founding group or hierarchy instructs these people on spiritual principles, and these people become spiritual servants to us. It can't be any other way, and it's quite proper that it should be that way. So, we say here is the hierarchy which instructs in spiritual matters and also conducts the services for the group. Now then, after this group grows bigger, we get a phenomenon, something like that. It kind of butts off here. And this hierarchy gets moved over here. See? Either they walk over here or they get kicked over here. And on top of the group, there is a circle formed. And this truncated pyramid, and the circle on top is the typical symbol of AA structure. They're all based on that diagram, every single one, ultimately and finally. Now this group, at first, may just have one guy or gal here, a small group, because it's extra. But if they got a fast hat and handle much money, by and by they got a treasure. And when they get still bigger, maybe they got a chairman. So you see, here's a familiar circle within the triangle, as being a circle. Now what's becoming these guys? Well, they divided it into two parts. This part here are the elder statesmen who realize now that the current for the authority for to serve is coming up out of the group to instruct the committee instead of being going down from here into the base. In other words, the current for service has been reversed. And therefore, this committee becomes strictly responsible to this. And I mean strictly responsible to the bunch of AAs in here who are paying the bills. And the committee can't go. And it can't direct the way these people want to do. This becomes just a committee of service, so this group can go on functioning. Now then, in actuality, this same thing occurs whether it's an inner group or whether it is a general service. Exactly the same thing happens. The diagram may look a little complicated, but the principle gets the same. Now here was the original service layout. Here was Dr. Bob, and here was me, kind of a double-headed job. And he and I get talking together, and we say, somehow, this great world of AA that lies out there has got to be reached. Somehow, this message has to be carried. How are we going to do it? Well, missionaries maybe, hospitals maybe, a book for sure, and later on, probably an office where we can receive inquiry. We can see this in 1937. Well, a lot of people didn't see it, and there was a lot of ruckus about the books and the missionaries and the hospitals. Thank God we never got the missionaries in the hospitals. We just didn't get inquiry. So, Dr. Bob and I looked up some friends. In this case, they had to be non-alcoholics. There was my brother-in-law, and dear old Dick Richardson, finding Mr. Rackbellers, and Frank Gaiman, and Leroy Chippen. And we go to these people and say, listen, we've got to have some kind of a service set up for AA. We need these things. It's going to take us a month. So they formed themselves into a committee. The next step is the committee. Once it's all. And on this committee, there are these three of those fellows, I think, at first, and there was Dr. Bob, and one drunk in New York who promptly got drunk. This was a committee to help AA fund. And the purpose of this committee was, first of all, getting the money together so we could put a book together, the AA book. This committee wanted to provide an office and do these things. Well,
This committee didn't raise any money.
So, we thought that if we incorporated the committee, I'm showing this by staff, we had something called the Alcoholics Foundation. So we put these units on trustees, and this was incorporated for two purposes, so it could better handle money when we thought we needed a lot. It was also incorporated to fix the ratio. We thought we needed more non-drunks on this particular thing because we were going to handle quite a lot of money. And one drunk was already filled. So we get also that this foundation would be tax-free for the rich to poor as always. So we get together this foundation, and this is now about the spring of 1938. So we go out listing to offer the foundation, and we don't get it, in spite of these wonderful connections. Well, still we got a function somehow. So we organized something over here called Works Publishing Company. And we began to sell shares in that to any drunks or their friends that would buy them. And this was the original book company, which is separately incorporated. And we finally came up with the book Alcoholics Anonymous. But we soon realized that these shares we had sold people, and the third interest that I had given myself, and the third interest that another fellow had, really ought to belong for this, because this is beginning to be regarded as a trusteeship for all of AA. So, the fellows that paid money into Works Publishing to get the book done and held stock in return, they gave their stock to the foundation. And so did my partner and I, and pretty soon we had something here called Works Publishing. Now then, as we got publicity, this book began to move, and as we got publicity, a hell of a lot of inquiries came in here. So that this thing, which is the book company, also became an AA office. Financed up until 1941 out of the proceeds of selling the book. We didn't have any other one. So then this trusteeship later on, over here in Westfield, there was something organized called the Grapevine. And the people who organized that said, let's get it on here because it's taken on nationally. So, what we really had was just a group of servants, which, because we were handling more money and because we had the activities that the AA office of publishing company in the Grapevine, but still, here were Timothy and me, and here were our friends, and here were the legal corporation, which looked at publishing the AA office in the magazine. Same thing in question. Here's your triangle of service. It's a hierarchy. We are a law unto ourselves. We're not responsible to the AA movement, except as we wish to make ourselves responsible. We're chartered to do anything but lobby for prohibition. Okay. So, same phenomenon. Here's AA growing worldwide, myself. Same day, you see. Around in here, there's a hell of a lot of complaint about this. We ain't got nothing to say about it. It's a rat. Bill Ladd, these gals, serve tea, and get a hell of a lot of pay. Got any trustees nobody ever saw or heard of. And we're on easy. Yeah, we'll send it some dough, and this book admittedly cost too much money, and this is a little somewhat better than nothing, but where's this place? Then kind of a deal with the conducting of the book itself. Same deal. Now, Dr. Bob gets sick and he's about to go out of the picture, and he does. The difference between this particular and the group or the intergroup is that this whole business averaged to be 1,500 miles away from the people that were serving. This served the world. So, if this thing collapsed, how would this great mass of 100 or 200,000 people ever get it going? Dr. Bob and I and a few of the gals here in the office were the chief players. There wasn't one AA in a thousand at the time who could have named even half the trustees, which by this time had run up to 10 and today stand at 15. So, we simply had to make ourselves here responsible to the movement and get communication with them. And that meant that the movement had to have something to say about who was going to be on here, and there had to be some kind of a meeting. So, we said, all right. Here comes a familiar circle sitting on top of the pyramid. And this circle are the 75 delegates, what the people in town, and here's the General Service Conference for the related service. And the authority, which once came down from here to serve you and to instruct you, now began to come up from the bottom. And we got that going just as Dr. Bob done. And I think just about as time, because if a few more of us old timers had passed off the steam, and something had gone wrong here, these people in here would have lost confidence, this thing would have collapsed. Now this thing, of course I'm probably biased because the last 15 years of my life have gone almost entirely into the formation of the structural thing. Well, I think I can say without hesitation that much of our unity, and maybe half of AA's stock, is directly attributable to this activity, an activity which today is still little known to the average AA out of the group. The conference has made vast strides in informing and instructing people what it is. And as you know, in July of 1955, on behalf of the old timers, I talked myself out almost. And said, look, this is yours. You got it. So you people here now have this through the authority of your conference and having the hope. But don't you see it's the same basic idea? Now let's see how another group starts. Take one around here, one I know a little bit about. Well, we start off this way. First, we got a clubhouse, and that's an incorporation. And that's where all the meetings were held here in town. And they got a board of directors in who were in, I guess, for as long as they wanted to be, and they were handpicking their successors, and they ran the club, and the proceeds of the hat went into the club treasury. And the club had a telephone, and calls for help came into the club. Well, after a while, the club got too small, so we got a bigger club. This one would seat 1,000 people. They had a restaurant over there that sold so many steaks for $1 that cost $2 if they ran up a $7,000 deficit. And had trouble, the club will. But in this block was the telephone, and the telephone was the connection with the area. So very naturally, the authorities in the club said, well, now look, this is an area service this club is performing, so once you people in this area contribute dues or contribute or make voluntary contributions, rather, to the club, a part of which we will allocate to this expense. Well, we tried and we tried and we tried to do this. And every time that the club hollered for money with which to maintain an intergroup secretary, because this was what was beginning to happen, everybody around town thought of them damn stairs. And they couldn't get it to portal. Well, then I, at the time, had a lot of energy and active and knowledge too, and wanted to get a finger in all the pie. Me, I start to try to start an intergroup. Nothing doing. Nothing happened at all until we got this lady out of the club entirely. The club got away entirely and broke up into smaller clubs. I'm not running down clubs, I understand. I'm just showing how it evolved here. And then came along some guy like Hank, who you know so well, and Fred Mayer's group, and they were younger and much more active than us mossbacks, and they didn't have any founding father complex. And they said to this area, look, for God's sake, in a place as big as New York, we've got to have a place where the telephone can be answered, and where we can attend to people who are in distress and relate them to the hospital, and carry on an overall service for this whole area, because now it's just an anarchy. And you want to do business, you locate that within the club, so let's get an office, and let each group in this area name a representative, and we will act temporarily as your committee, as usual, Brad and Hank, and two or three more, set them up, filled up as a typical hierarchy, we're going to start it. And then, sure enough, they got an office. And then these guys went around to every group in the area and said, will you support this? Providing, and we'll agree to move out of the way. And you people take control. So this was the first setup. And then here was the New York area. And instead of this being full of individuals, it got very full of groups. So, the group representatives from here met in a meeting, same idea, which included this committee, and the rule was that they could, that this committee would offer to the area new names for memberships on this rotating committee, which has now become located, for election by the group representatives from the area. I think that was the original deal. But it was thoroughly understood that if this committee, which had started all this and got it in motion and got it financially supported and it got the group, the delegates meeting together, if they didn't like the nomination of this committee, the nomination could come from the floor. And therefore, it was a balance between the straight the town meeting democracy of a single group and the semi-hierarchical situation that we have now with the conference of foundation. In other words, this was not only a democracy, the fact that these people could nominate for election gave it a slightly Republican structure. I don't mean Republican in a party sense. I mean in the sense that these people could name their successors if they were elected. That was the proposition. In other words, that was the balance. And I think that basically that is the situation here. And you see, it's the same thing. And every time it's a question of AA service, there's always the ultimate structure like that. Here's your committee, and here are the active elements in it. These may be C4, this might be a foundation, a publishing company, or whatever. The principle is exactly the same. And the pillar all starts down from the do it now boys and the self-starters and get this thing going, and then it reverses itself and comes up. And those are the basics of AA service as far as I can see from top to bottom. Now, in the course of these experiences, which we have had as groups, and and which we have had as intergroups and which we've had as foundations, several very fundamental things stand out. In the first place, oh, I'm treading on the mic. There were certain fundamentals, lessons that we learned through a lot of grief. For example, we found that the conduct of an AA office, an intergroup office, or the world office was not entirely a business. To be true, it had to be run on business-like lines. It had to have that kind of a discipline. But after all, we were all in the club. And it was all, so it also became an art. And we found, particularly with these world services, that it was a great trick not to divide people into two sharply defined classes. For example, you can have a management committee for an intergroup office, and then you can have a gal or two working there, or a guy. But please let this gal or guy sit on the committee as a minority. Don't make a committee which is giving directives often to those who know better, who, because they are hired hands, aren't supposed to have a vote. I think it's important that those people have a vote. We found that so in our affairs at the foundation, and I think intergroups in general are finding it out. Another thing that we learned in the hard way was the idea of giving very thorough financial accounts, of making our affairs completely open to anyone who wanted to take a little bit of trouble to find out. Those were some of the basics. We found, too, that you had to define functions and jobs and put proper names on them, so that people knew what was expected of them, so that their responsibility and their authority were always equal, so that you didn't have all of the authority over here and all of the responsibility over there, so that you didn't get two-headed management and all of that sort of business. Okay. Now, I guess that's about all I've got to say in a general way about these things. Now, there may be specific questions, and I'm supposed to wind up this in about 10 minutes. Fire away now. Not that I can answer these. Sometimes the longer I'm mixed up with this service business, the less I'm sure I know about it. But I'll make some kind of answers to most questions, I think. Yeah.
So in your division of that one triangle, you give us an account of what happened to the one half, but you forgot the other. What happened to the other half?
Oh, the other half that moved off to the side, who helped start the thing, well, they get sore and they stay sore. They get... And actually, the deacons abdicating and moving off to the side voluntarily, if they do that, and they have done a good job, and they have the longer experience, and they have the confidence of people, actually the deacons who do the job in that fashion become sort of elder statesmen. And when the group goes into trouble, they go over and say, well, John, you used to serve on this committee, and you've seen a lot more of this stuff, and we're having one hell of a time. What's your private advice? The other half go around and usually try to get reelected to reinstate their power and so on. They become the bleeding deacons. And it's actually a part of our spiritual growing up. I mean, this ability to bow down and to bow out. And in that connection, I might say that a first step, certainly, and a very big one, was taken as far as we very old mossbacks in AA are concerned at 1955 in St. Louis. We know that death, illness, sometimes we're going to get credited. In one way or another, we must pass off the scene. And 1955 was a sign and a token to you that we were not being kicked off the scene, we were walking off and saying, look, you grew up and you got it.
If rotating leadership is the damn good for younger people, it's also good here, too. And I really mean, so far as I'm concerned, to put it into effect. I only want to do a few more chores with respect to World Services to get out this manual, or maybe to help the Grapevine get in a little better shape. And then I'm saying, look, this is yours. Here's the machine. If cracks, flaws appear in the machinery that we haven't anticipated, if you need me for some job like that, I'll come back and play elder statesman a little while. But basically, it's all yours. You finance it. You determine its policy. It's yours. It belongs to this movement. Now, what became of these fellows that gripe? Well, some got drunk, and some became elder statesmen after learning the hard way. That's the answer. I've learned the hard way, I might add. Well, let's have some more questions. Yeah.
And it is all in line between the services of inner growth and the general service family.
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people felt, and I was inclined to think, well, now here, in a hell of a lot of these areas, we've got, good, strong inner group. You got experienced people who have dealt with services, proved their capabilities. So why don't we either dissipate the general services throughout the intergroups and make them pick up parts of it? That's one concept. Or the other is, why don't the same people or the same organization, the intergroup organization, nominate delegates for New York? And why doesn't the local intergroup pick up funds which it, after it has satisfied its own needs, passes on to New York? Well, it's a good deal like trying to mix, of course, we're not a governmental organization in any way. This is a service thing. But it's a good deal like saying to the governor of the state of New York, well, now you've got a fine old state here, my friend, and there's a lot of dough here. And I'm the federal tax collector. But you collect the taxes, and when you have spent all you need to spend on New York, send the rest to Washington. Well, it don't get there. See? And we found that to be a fact in our own affair. That's one reason why it won't overlap. Another reason why it won't overlap is this. That the activities of an intergroup have to do with the immediate contact with the guy in crying need. And that's the sort of an activity that a fellow who is in from 6 months to 6 years functions best, you see? Now, very often, though, this type of thing that we have here, which means publishing of literature, handling of policy, handling of public relations, group relations, translations, magazines, and all that kind of thing. They're the older and more experienced heads, both on your foundations and your delegates become of more value. And if you try to perform both functions, you're bound to get schizophrenia. Supposing that I'm very active in intergroup affairs here in New York, I've got all I can do. And I'm interested in hospital hookups and in keeping that intergroup supported. I'm interested in the management of that office. How in God's name can I at the same time do much of a job for General Service? When I'm done with my intergroup job, then I'm a wonderful prospect, you see, to do something else. But the jobs are dissimilar. The age brackets in AA of the people. The real young eager beaver can do a wonderful job around an intergroup, whereas he don't necessarily walk into the general service picture and do a job because he isn't mature enough yet AA-wise and AA business-wise. Does that clear it? Well, let's have another one. Guess it must be all over.
Well, is it feasible? I understand from the club that the similarity of jobs and age brackets. Is it technically feasible anywhere to have DSC office and intergroup under the same roof but separate entities? different officers, different secretaries.
Well, of course, you mustn't take anything I've said as is absolute gospel. I mean, there are none of these attitudes and ideas that don't have some elasticity in them. I don't mean to say for one minute that a guy who is interested in intergroup at home shouldn't make a hell of a good delegate down here, or that there shouldn't be an interlocking of the local state committees. I can imagine a good state committeeman maybe also happens to be very interested in local intergroup. But the organization, the direct responsibility, has to go from the group to the intergroup, and then from the group to the foundation. And if you try to route the line of responsibility through the intergroup and then to the foundation, you're getting people who are trying to handle very dissimilar affairs, and they're very naturally, if I'm intensely interested in an intergroup association, and the dough is kind of scarce, me, I'm going to get that dough into that intergroup association, and that New York deal is swell, but it's a long way off, and some of the other boys will take care of that. So let's tend to the home need, which within limits is good philosophy. On the other hand, if I'm a general service guy, pure and simple, if I've had this prior experience, all the better, I'm interested in general service, you see? Now, your question as to whether you could have the two offices side by side, I think the side by side business is fine, so long as you don't try to actually merge it. It's a good deal like it used to be in the old days. The club membership and the group membership was one and the same thing, but running a clubhouse and operating a group were two very dissimilar things. So when you tried to merge the two under the same management, the whole thing got schizophrenic. Well, it's like that with general service and intergroup. They basically ought to be separately organized and separately financed, although the same people can obviously be interested in both up to a point. Yeah.
When you're talking about general service to an individual that belongs to the school of thought, keep it simple, what do you come back with?
I come back always with this idea that I hope and believe that I'm one of the greatest advocates of simplicity in this movement. And it all depends on what you mean, simplicity. What does the word mean applied to YA? In other words, you could have kept it simple in one sense of the word, if we'd allowed this thing to spread from mouth to mouth, if there'd been no services, if there'd been no literature, some people consider that to be simplicity. Well, there is such a thing as simplifying to the point where it becomes ruinous. In other words, the virtue turns around and becomes a vice. In other words, if you oversimplify an automobile by leaving off the tires and you run it a while on the rims, you haven't got simplicity at all, you've got a busted automobile. Huh? Now, on the other hand, this idea that we have got to have great big sums of money and governments and big bureaucratic staff and all that sort of thing, that makes for complications. So therefore, we carefully organize our services so as to make for simplicity of operation and effectiveness. If we over-organize them, that causes confusion. If we don't have any and don't properly finance them and organize them, then we got an anarchy, and that's confusion. So that actually the service organization is for the purpose of keeping this thing both simple and effective. If you underdo it, it's ineffective and it ain't simple. If you overdo it, it's just as confusing. So it's the middle ground where the biggest simplicity is for us. We hope. Yes, sir.
The bill got $12,000
in
hand-related educational operations. How can that be helpful to that?
Well, there you get into this question of things that are not of AA, but are of necessity closely related. As a matter of fact, we've got things which are strictly AA. Intergroup services, general services, services at the group level, strictly AA. Then you got the type of service or facility that you might call a club. And every damn member is an AA. But years ago, we began to see that you mustn't mix running clubs with running AA groups. So we advocated that those things be separately incorporated and the AA name taken off, so that they stood or fell and became the function of interested individuals. And it didn't spoil an AA's membership because he went to a club or belonged to a club or paid dues, but he couldn't go out and thump the tub for the club by the use of the AA name. This was a private affair. Now then, we have had the same experience with these close-in facilities with this family group situation. When this thing started, some of us liked it very much and some of us thought it was god-awful. But exactly like the club, it got very evident that we were going to have these family groups around whether we drunks liked it or not. Just as we found that we were going to have clubs whether we liked it or not. So it wasn't a question of whether you were going to have them, what were you going to do with them? Well, the same is with the club. You're close in, you're our family, you ought to benefit by this thing. But set this up, separately incorporate it, keep the AA name out of it, and things will be fine. And so the clubs have found their proper niche and relation, so have the family groups. Now you take one step a little further outside AA. And you come to this question of education, let us say. Well, the foundation, that original committee of friends, a few drunks, was chartered to educate, to research, as I say, to do everything but lobby for prohibition. We really thought that AA, you know, should try to be all things to all people. And therefore, we ought to have an AA brand of education and an AA brand of research and AA brand of anything that was at all related to alcohol or what we were doing. Well, some of our members got into various brands of education, some good, some not so good. Inevitably, those people said, well, gee, I'm an AA. They said it right out and loud in public. I'm also with the XYZ committee, or the XYZ university, or this or that state commission. And if they went out and advertised themselves publicly as AAs connected with these enterprises, it immediately began to draw our endorsement onto it. And those enterprises very naturally said, well, gee, we got the public blessing of AA and it's grand. I mean, nobody's blameworthy for these conditions. They were perfectly natural. So, after a long period of confusion, we had to say, look, the individual AA member who is interested and competent should carry what we know in AA into these other efforts if he is invited, provided he will do so as a citizen and not publicly as an AA member. In other words, it would be antisocial to keep our knowledge to ourselves and refuse to share it with education, refuse to share it with medicine, refuse to share it with religion. This is AA, and we can't say anything about these matters as groups, nor even as individuals. Well, if you tried to stop the individuals, you couldn't anyway. They'd have gone and thumbed their nose at you, drunk like that. So there wasn't any controlling it there. The only place you could control it was to keep the AA movement and the AA group as such out of education, research, and endorsement. But at the same time, say to the member, if you were interested, you'll get in there and pitch. But don't use the AA name publicly to get this venture of yours money and publicity. Well, that's how that worked out. We're now having a similar series of problems which really bring to bear the same principle. Well, let me take the one case. Here was the 12 step house. Well, the 12 step house and many of its counterparts operating under name, perfectly good idea. That the fellow who is way in the derelict class and really beat down needs a little extra lift. Well, if it's charitable and a wonderful idea, it might require some management and some money and some clothes and all this kind of thing. Okay. Those things have always got along all right if they had a competent management, if they didn't try to use the AA name publicly to raise money or draw an endorsement onto their particular act. But every time they've tried it, they've got in disfavor with AA, but they needed the cooperation of AA. So that relation has gradually worked out, and the poor ones have collapsed, and some of the good ones have gone on and done a swell job. Now we're running into what we call the dual purpose groups. And we're running into this question of what we're going to do with people who have related problems. I've got a hell of a queer sex problem, I'd say. Or we got a divorce problem. Or we got a narcotics problem. Or we got a gambling problem. Or we're too fat. Or we're nervous. We've got an erotic problem. Well, around in AA, we got people with all those problems. I guess I got all of them myself. However, I am a drunk and you're a drunk. So the primary basis of my identification with you is the hell of a time I had drinking and the wonderful time I've had getting old, which has involved, however, with dealing with some of these underlying problems which we already had. So now, as you know, there have been a great many sort of offshoots or copies of AA, some faithful facsimiles, some not so much so. We have Neurotics Anonymous and Gamblers Anonymous and Addicts Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and Divorcees Anonymous. And we have some organizations that deal with mental cases like Recovery Incorporated and the We Are Not Alone Society. And some of these people begin to do very well, and they're borrowing from. Now, some of our members go over to these other people to help them and to be helped. And that is fine. But now, again, comes the old problem that we had with the club, with the family, with the education. Now we want to be married. So, let's say I'm a narcotic addict as well as an alcoholic. Well, we've got around in AA a lot of people who've had trouble not only with pills, but with morphine. I mean, a genuine addict. They identified with us, they joined us because they were also alcoholics. But naturally, having had the addiction problem too, they know the awful agony of that. They want to carry this message to the pure, straight addict. So, in some cases, they've tried to bring those people to AA meetings and bring them into full membership. Well, right away, the wheels begin to grind because are we going to take on all of the world's problems, and can anybody with a problem join AA? No, we decided long ago AA was for a drunk. No matter what complications a drunk has and how many other problems, we don't care anything about that. The only thing we want to know is, are you drunk, do you want to get over? And we'll stick to that. But now comes the guy with a pure narcotic problem, and he comes to an AA group, and he says, well, I want to belong. Well, under group autonomy, this group can really do about as it likes. You can say to them, well, we only deal with alcoholics here. Or you can say to them, well, look, you can come and sit in an open meeting and maybe you'll find a few friends around who've also had the narcotic problem who can help you start a narcotics group. Or maybe we're going to put you up on the platform and let you give a narcotic testimony, and we're going to put you on the committee and we're going to take you right in. Well, this last mentioned course just doesn't work very well. Because if a straight narcotic, let us say, is to become an AA member, he has to be capable of doing AA 12-step work. He has to be capable of doing AA committee work, and he has to be capable of making an AA pitch from a platform, and how the hell can he if he's a narcotic? He can't. So that it is my hope that where there are good-sized open meetings, that AA members who themselves have had a narcotic experience and wish to work with narcotics should certainly be permitted to bring these people in as visitors to get fixed, with the idea that they may be able to start their own groups. But I don't see how we can go any further with that. And the group is the last word on the subject, though. The group can do what it wants. Now then the question comes, if you've got, in an institution, let's say, you've got a peculiar condition where they can't have but one meeting a week, the AA group, and here are a lot of narcotic people, and here are people with just a plain crime problem and other problems, and they see these drunks getting so much better emotionally, and say, how do you do it? And they go to the warden, and maybe the group goes to the warden and says, well, can't these other people come to our meeting? Or can't they have separate meetings, and can't we help them out? The warden says, no, you can't have separate meetings, you just have one of these meetings a week. And it would be great if you have these people there. Or I'm telling you, I'm putting them there. So, okay. So in comes the guy with his sex problem, with the narcotic problem, with the burglary problem, or whatever it is. And he sits down with the AA group in the meeting. Well, I say, what of it? The only thing that that group mustn't do is to say, we're the AA neurotic group, or we are the AA burglary group. See? If that group is going to be listed in the directory as an AA group, these other people have got to be visitors. Then when they go out, there isn't any guarantee that you're going to receive a guy who was just a plain yegg that never drank any grog. Maybe he would be received as an open meeting, maybe not. I don't know. I think that's up to each group. Now, you see, there are these borderline cases which are not matters of shifting the AA tradition around. It's just a reasonable application. And again, it's just middle course. You can take the course. We'll have nothing to do with anything whatever but a drunk. A pure drunk. Well, in the first place, there ain't any pure drunk. You've got all these things and it'll be drunk. Or you can take the attitude, AA is going to save the world. Let's bring them all in. Now, how do you apply the AA tradition of the single purpose of AA and the no endorsement idea of AA and the group autonomy idea of AA? If you take those three traditions, you can work out fair application, which will make what we know available to these other situations and groups, and at the same time not get us married and compromised, which might ruin us. Because I think that it is a fundamental running all through government and through all forms of society that your first function is to preserve your own entity. Let us first preserve Alcoholics Anonymous, then next let us, as individuals, do what we can for the world around us. Okay.
Bill, I know that I'm speaking for all of us here, and I thank you very, very much for a wonderful talk. And this brings to an end the first part of our afternoon session. The program following is that the Intergroup Association of New York will conduct a workshop on services with my good friend Eddie in the chair, and I think three or four excellent speakers. Then the committee, the General Service Committee of New York, will have a group of speakers in the college room, and we'll conduct a workshop there on general services. And I'm asking those who are interested in general services to come with me to the college room. Thank you again very much, and I now declare a short intermission of 10 minutes.